The lectionary points us today to Matthew's 7th chapter, which is the beginning of the last section of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' great sermon that's recorded in Matthew. And it has memorable instruction here at the beginning of this last section. How many of you have ever heard these words, "Don't judge, lest ye be judged"? Few of you, anyway. Or maybe you didn't use that old language. Maybe it was just, "Don't judge that you won't be judged," something like that. That's the memorable instruction here in this text. And I'm just going to dive right in this morning, Matthew chapter 7, starting with verse 1. Follow along if you will. These are the words of Jesus. "Don't judge so that you won't be judged. You'll receive the same judgment you give. Whatever you deal out will be dealt out to you. Why do you see the splinter in your brother or sister's eye, but don't notice the log in your own eye? How can you say to your brother or sister, 'Let's take the splinter out of your eye,' when there's a log in your own eye? You deceive yourself. First take the log out of your eye, then you'll see clearly to take the splinter out of your brother or sister's eye. Don't give what is holy. Don't give holy things to dogs, and don't throw pearls in front of pigs. They will stomp on the pearls and turn around and attack you." All right. In 2009, 10 years ago, Bobby and I sang a song related to this text, a song that was written by Paul Ulrich. And since then, there have been numerous requests for an encore. When I told Bobby that, when I said there have been numerous requests, he said, "Really?" And I realized, no, there's only been one request. But I bribed him this morning. He agreed to accompany me. He wouldn't sing with me, but he said, "I'll play the guitar." So here goes an added bonus for today for the sermon, a song by Paul Ulrich. There once was a man from way out west who always thought he knew what was best. And if anyone tried to cross his path, they were sure to receive the deadly wrath of Law Guy. Law Guy. Law Guy thought it was his job to enforce the law, telling all the people about the evil he saw, trying to turn the bad guys into good, but he never could see that big chunk of wood. Log Eye, Log Eye, Log Eye, Log Eye. You can't stand face to face with Log Eye, Log Eye. Well, the good old brothers, key change. Okay. The good old brothers were coming to town with Law Guy. It promised to be a big showdown. They came to meet him in the middle of the street. Law Guy was ready. He'd never been beat. But the strangers gave him a mirror in the form of a book. That was all it took for Law Guy. He only needed one look. He finally yanked out that big chunk of wood, threw it in the fire. Now he's looking for good. No longer Log Eye. All right, sing with me if you will. Log Eye, Log Eye. You can't stand face to face with Log Eye, Log Eye. Now there's a lesson to be learned from the life of Log Eye, so please don't let this moral pass you by. If you find fault in others, don't condemn them to die, for you might just be blinded by the tree in your eye, Log Eye. Sing with me again. Log Eye, Log Eye. You you can't stand face to face with log eye, log eye. All right, good job. Thanks for singing. That's a once every 10-year thing right there. All right. And that's what you'll remember. We might as well just go home right now. Jesus said, don't judge so that you won't be judged. Don't judge so that you won't be judged. Now, one of the first questions we might ask is, what did he mean by don't judge? Did he mean don't discern between right and wrong? Did he mean don't figure out what's good and what's bad or what's good and evil? We don't think so, because the very Sermon on the Mount is trying to teach us what is good and help us discern what is good and right and avoid evil. So when Jesus says don't judge, he's not saying don't judge between what's right and wrong, but rather he's saying something that is much more like our word condemn. He's talking about ranking people below us or dismissing people as less than us. Writing people off, we might say. Condemning, writing people off. And so today I want to talk about condemnation. I want to talk about condemning. Rather than don't judge, I want you to think don't condemn. And I want to talk about the harm that condemnation causes. So I'll start out this morning by just noting two ways that condemnation is very harmful. And then I want to take note of what Jesus says happens when we condemn others. When we condemn others. Thirdly, I want to note what Jesus says is an opportunity of something to do besides condemning, and what we should do instead of condemning others. And then finally, I want to simply ask you to take a look in the mirror. Ask what the log in your own eye is and how you might take steps to remove it. What I really want for myself, I want this for myself as well as for you, is to be free of logs in my eyes. Free of logs so that I can see clearly, know how to help others and love others appropriately and live joyously. All right, so let me start by talking about ways condemning is harmful. And I think you understand these things. Condemnation is not a good thing. We don't like to be condemned. Anytime we are condemned, it feels bad. But why? Well, here's a couple reasons. The first is this. Perhaps it's the most obvious. When we condemn others, we damage the spirits, the humanity, the dignity, the person. Condemn them, we're making them almost, pushing them almost down and saying they're subhuman. And when people believe those things, when they're condemned and they believe it's true, the condemnation is true, it does incredible damage to them as a person. I have an acquaintance whose father told him over and over and over again all the years that he was growing up, you'll never accomplish anything. You'll never amount to anything. You'll never be worth anything. You're no good. Imagine hearing that over and over again while you were growing up. Those are some of the most damaging messages a kid could ever hear. And the man that told me this story, part of his story, said, I believed it. I believed those words. And I heard those words over and over again in my head throughout my lifetime. And they convinced me that I was worthless. And so that man lived out for a time anyway what he believed about himself in very self-destructive ways. Now that may be an extreme example. It may be an extreme example. But even if we've been told that we're worthless one time, we tend to remember that, and it tends to shape us and mold us, often in destructive ways. We perhaps believe that that's true, what we've been told about ourselves when we were condemned. Others of us spend our lifetime trying to prove that it's not true and trying to prove that we are full of worth. So condemnation can do immense damage to the spirit, the humanity, the dignity, the personhood of anyone who receives it. And thus, condemning someone is almost like the opposite of creating someone. If creating a person gives birth to life, condemning demolishes or destroys life. Not helpful, but harmful. Here's a second reason that condemnation is harmful. Because it blinds the people who do the condemning. It keeps us from truly seeing another person when we condemn them. When I condemn someone, I'm refusing to truly try and see or understand who they are, which, by the way, is the only way I can have restoration and reconciliation with someone. If I see them, if I really see that person and understand who they are. But condemning someone blinds us to that. Perhaps I'm frustrated. Let's say I'm frustrated with millennials that I work with. It's not true, Josiah. It's just an example. Maybe the easy thing for me to do if I'm frustrated with millennials is to just hastily condemn. You know, to simply make judgments announcing they're lazy or they just mooch off their parents or they don't know how to take responsibility or do hard work. That's the easy thing to do. The much harder thing to do is to ask questions and look carefully. What are the social and emotional forces? What are the environmental forces that have come into play and shaped millennials' decisions and actions? See, if I condemn, I'm just simply quickly dismissing and not really looking, not really seeing. And if I don't really see someone else, I'll have no idea how to love them appropriately, no idea how to provide what they need, to give them what they need. And some interpreters think that's what Jesus was talking about when he said, don't give what's holy to dogs or pearls to pigs. That's a notoriously difficult thing to interpret. And there have been lots of ideas and suggestions about it through the years. But some have proposed that Jesus was saying, when you condemn someone, you can't truly see them, and thus you end up giving them what they don't need. You end up giving holy things to dogs and pearls to pigs instead of what dogs and pigs really need, which is food. And so, even though the dogs and the pigs have very valuable things, holy things and pearls, they're still hungry, and so they turn around and attack you when you try to give them the things that they don't need. Plus, now you've given your good things, your holy things, your pearls to animals, and don't have anything left to give to humans. I don't know for sure if that's what Jesus was talking about when he said, don't give holy things to dog or pearls to pigs, but it makes sense to some extent. Condemning someone else blocks our vision, and we can't see them, and we can't see what they need, and we don't know how to love them and serve them appropriately. I think we all get this. I think we all get how condemning and condemnation causes deep harm, both to those who receive it and to those who give it. You understand that. And Jesus says the results of condemnation, this is the second thing to say this morning, the results of condemnation are that you end up condemned yourself. You end up being dealt with in the same way you deal with people. You end up being damaged by condemning words and hurt by the blindness of others who give you what you don't need. You end up receiving what you've given. Some of you remember studying the 14th century epic poem, maybe in high school, maybe in college, The Divine Comedy, Dante Alighieri. The first part, the first section of that great epic is called The Inferno, and it's about a journey that Dante takes with the Roman poet Virgil through hell. And you know what? The Inferno, this poem has shaped our imaginations of hell more than the scriptures, for sure. I'll bet you more than half the things you believe about hell have come from Dante's poem rather than from the scriptures. But anyway, in this great epic poem, Dante takes this journey through hell with the poet Virgil, and he encounters people along the way who are being punished for their sins in ways that kind of seem appropriate for what their sin was. So, for instance, Dante encounters people there who could never choose between good and evil. They always sat on the fence. They never could choose between good and bad. They would never take action for one thing or the other. They didn't let the cares of the world concern them or touch them or bother them. And so he sees these people in hell. They're condemned to chasing a blank banner around in circles, and they'll never catch it. They just have to chase this blankness around because they never made choices about good and evil or what to serve or what to do. And because they didn't allow the cares of the world to concern them or to touch them, they're constantly touched by wasps and hornets while they chase this banner around. So these wasps and hornets symbolically sting them forever because they didn't let any other cares or concerns ever touch them in life. Now, we call all that poetic justice. When somebody kind of gets what they receive, we think. We call it poetic justice. But this is kind of what Jesus was saying. If you condemn quickly, you're going to be quickly condemned. If you're not merciful, others won't be merciful to you. In other places, he said, if you don't forgive others, you won't be forgiven. Whatever you deal out will be dealt out to you. And maybe that sounds good when we're applying it to other people, right? Oh, that guy's going to get what he deserves. Won't that be poetic justice? But it's not so good when it comes to us. Not so good when it's applied to ourselves. Yet that's what Jesus said the results would be if we condemn others. So, instead of condemning others, Jesus offers us a transforming initiative. That's a term coined by Glenn Stassen, the late Christian ethicist who based a lot of his ethical philosophy on the Sermon on the Mount. Stassen said that with each issue Jesus raised in the Sermon on the Mount, that Jesus offered a different path that would transform not just our actions, but our hearts. That we would be transformed if we took this different path. And in this section of the sermon, the part about judging and condemning, Stassen says Jesus offers this transforming initiative. Work on your own problems. Instead of condemning others, look in the mirror and work on your own problems. Now, I don't think Jesus was saying that we should never condemn injustice or oppression, that he was teaching us not to advocate for what was right and just. Jesus clearly taught that we must care about our neighbors and the communities that we live in, that we must advocate for what's right and just. He clearly taught us that we had to care about others besides ourselves, especially those who have little power to change things for themselves. But Jesus was saying that the first step in correcting injustice is removing sins and injustice from our own lives. Taking the log out of our own eye. You know, one thing I've noticed is it's easy to point out the problems that other people have. Here's this guy, you can't read it, but he's pointing out the splinter in the other guy's eye. It's easy to point out other people's problems, isn't it? A few of you nod with me, make me feel like I've got some partners here. It's a lot harder to see the log in our own eye. It's a lot harder to identify what our own difficulties, what our own problems are. But Jesus was saying that if we want to live fully into the kingdom of God, that we have to address our own problems, to first take the log out of our own eye, to look in the mirror and find out, what is that log? Truly look at ourselves. There's a man who was stopped at the department store on the way home from work. He wanted to take his wife something nice as a gift. And he went in, and the clerk was behind the counter, and he said, "Would you bring me a bottle of perfume? I want to take something to my wife." And she brought out a bottle of perfume, and it had a $150 price tag on it. And he said to her, "No, I was thinking something a little bit smaller." And so she took it back and brought out another bottle, and it had an $80 price tag on it. And he said, "No, I was thinking something a little bit smaller." And so she took it back and she brought out another bottle. It had a $25 price tag on it. And he said, "You know, I just got to admit it. What I really wanted is just something very cheap." So she reached under her counter and grabbed a mirror and held it up to him. Sometimes we have to look in the mirror carefully to identify the log in our own eye. Sometimes we have to ask other people to help us see it. People in recovery movements begin this process of recovery and healing by taking what they call a fearless inventory. A fearless inventory, taking a serious, hard look in the mirror at their own lives and asking what needs to be changed, what needs to be removed from my life so that I live into this life that I was created to live and intended to live. And that's hard work. It's a lot more realistic than the song where Log Guy just takes the log out of his eye, throws it in the fire, and it's gone for good. That's not very realistic. The more realistic thing is the hard work of a fearless inventory and asking over and over and over again, "God, reveal to me what needs to come out of my life so that your love and spirit can fill me. Reveal it to me." And when we're doing that hard work of removing the log from our own eye, here's what I've learned. We don't have much time or energy to point out the splinter in someone else's eye. It may be that we spend a whole lifetime working on our own problems to the extent that we never get around to taking splinters out of other people's eyes. Perhaps that's part of what Jesus was talking about. So Jesus leaves us with this task, focusing on our own problems. Focusing on our own problems instead of pointing out others' problems. So we must ask ourselves, what's the log that needs to be removed from my eye? And then what steps can I take to get it out? We don't need to focus on what other people are doing. We need to focus on ourselves. We need to focus on ourselves and ask God to help restore ourselves to the condition in which we were created and intended to be. So one key to this kingdom life that Jesus is talking about in the Sermon on the Mount, one transforming initiative on the way there, stop condemning others and start focusing on your own self. Let me close with a made-up story about a guy who goes to heaven. It's just a made-up story. It's written in first person. It goes like this. "I was shocked, I was confused, bewildered as I entered heaven's door. Not by the beauty of it all, or the lights, or the decor, or the splendor, but it was the other people who were there that shocked me. The people who were there in heaven that made me sputter and gasp. The thieves, the liars, the sinners, the riffraff. There was a guy over there that beat me up constantly in seventh grade and stole my lunch money over and over again. And next to him was a guy, my neighbor, who never said anything nice about anybody else. And over there, Herb, who I thought was rotting in hell, he was sitting on cloud nine looking very, very happy and peaceful. So I nudged Jesus and said, 'What's up? You know, what's going on here? How'd all these people get up here? God must have made a mistake. And why is everybody so quiet and looking at me?' Well," Jesus said, "they are all in shock because none of them thought they'd see you here. You all get it. Take the log out of your own eye so you can see clearly.